Good afternoon. My name is Steve Doubt. I am a storyteller at stevedoubt.com. That's Steve, D-A-U-T.com. And I tell all sorts of different kinds of stories. I have a couple of Mark Twain programs, and this is one of them, Mark Twain's Baseball Escapades. In 1887, Mark Twain became a shareholder of the Hartford Baseball Club. Apparently, the sporting news didn't think much of the club, as evidenced by the following announcement. To wit, Mark Twain contributes liberally to the support of the Hartford Baseball Club. Mark's reputation as a first-class humorist is now firmly established. The club hosted the Hartford Dark Blues. And that team, the Hartford Dark Blues, rose through the ranks of baseball to challenge the Boston Red Stockings for the National Association pennant. The National Association was a forerunner of the National League. The Blues lost that game 10-5, and consistent with Twain's unbroken record as a rotten businessman, the Hartford Baseball Club folded soon afterwards. Now, Twain attended a game between the Brooklyn Atlantics and the Hartford Dark Blues, and his umbrella went missing. Twain published a reward in the Hartford Daily Courant, to wit, at the great baseball match on Tuesday, while I engaged in hurrahing, a small boy walked off with an English-made brown silk umbrella belonging to me, and he forgot to bring it back. I will pay $5 for the return of the umbrella in good condition to my house on Farmington Avenue. I do not want the boy in an active state, but will pay $200 for his remains. There's more to that story, but you'll have to ask me privately about what that is. In 1887, Twain agreed to umpire an exhibition game among businessmen in Elmira, New York, between teams simply identified as the Alerts and the Unions. He specified certain conditions. He had to be provided with a chair, an umbrella to keep the sun off, and a pitcher of ice water. And then he set the following rules. The players were allowed to carry umbrellas into the field to protect against the sun. Tricycles were not allowed. Children who laughed if their parents muffed a play could be disciplined behind the stand, but not on it. Any disagreements between the umpires would be decided by majority rule rather than by noise from the grandstands or teams. However, there appeared to be only two umpires, Twain and the mayor of Elmira, and it is not certain which one constituted a majority. Players would not be allowed to receive flowers while running the bases. The audience was not allowed to say hi to a player weighing over 200 pounds as they round second base. Now, when he went out there, Twain carried a mysterious package, and when one of his calls was disputed, he placed his left foot lightly on the package and said it contained dynamite and that he had written his obituary the night before. None of his subsequent calls were disputed. When Twain and the mayor found it too hot on the field, they went to the coolest part of the stands, and Twain officiated by proxy from there. But since he couldn't see well from the stands, Twain declared that any ball that was hurled within 8 feet of home plate was to be considered a strike. Now, a couple years later, he wrote the book, A Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court. He, in that book, wrote a short segment about baseball, and I have adapted that for a obviously sophisticated modern audience. And here it is. I've been working with the Knights, training them to try their hand at something other than jousting, the sword fights, and other sports in the King's Tournament. I figured it would not only save those young fellers from injury, but it would keep them entertained. The experiment that I tried was baseball. Normally, I'd pick my nines by capacity, but in order to give the match vogue from the start, I matched them up by rank instead. It was easy to do. There wasn't a knight in either team who wasn't a scepter sovereign. As for material of that sort, there was always a glut of it around Arthur. You couldn't throw a brick in any direction and not cripple a king. Of course, I couldn't get these people to leave off their armor. They wouldn't do that even when they took a bath. They consented to differentiate the armor so that a body could tell one team from the other, but that was the most they would do. So one of the teams wore chainmail, and the other wore plate armor made of that newfangled Bessemer steel. Their practice in the field was the most fantastic thing I ever saw. Being ball-proof, they never skipped out of the way, but stood still and took the result. When a Bessemer was at the bat and a ball hit him, it would bound 150 yards sometimes. In fact, they had so much fun with the sound and action of it, I made the rule that if you bonked a player with a ball, the ball stayed live no matter where it went. And that stopped the practice right off. And when a man was running and threw himself on his stomach to slide into base, it was like an ironclad coming into port. Nothing could be done about that. The baseman just had to get out of the way. Well, at first I appointed men of no rank to act as umpires, but I had to discontinue that. These people were no easier to please than the other nines. The umpire's first decision was usually his last. They broke him in two with a bat, and his friends toted him home on a shutter. When it was noticed that no umpire ever survived the game, umpiring began to be unpopular. Well, as the game wore on that first day, it got pretty hot in the afternoon, and so the chainmail team won. Not because they were any better than the others, but chainmail has a little more ventilation to it, and so they kept cooler. But the plate armor team kept losing players to heat prostration. And so the upshot of the experiment was that baseball and knights in shining armor do not mix. And that is that. Thank you. I'm Steve Doubt, stevedoubt.com. Come and listen to me on my website and check my podcast, Telling Twain. Thank you.